are listening to Cannibal.
The Force is what gives the Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together.
Hello, everyone. I am your host, Lady Madonna, and you are listening to Camera Roll. Today, on our movie review section, we'll talk about the latest adaptation of a classic novel. And that's why we're starting early, because we're going to give you all the insight on that movie. And we have a few surprises for you, so stay on with us. And remember, any comments, requests, anything you'd like to tell us, you can go into our Facebook page. Just log into Facebook and type in Camera Roll, and we're over there. And you can also follow us on Twitter at the account at LadyMadonna_DUC. And if you can't find either of those, you can go to the website, our website, radio.dominican.edu, and hit the Twitter button, because the Facebook one doesn't work right now, but go into hit the Twitter button, and over there you can find a link to the Facebook page. So go ahead and follow us and like us, and feel free to tell us everything you like. And, well, let's start with this. Remember, you are on radio.dominican.edu.
Hello!
This is prime time.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Oh, my God.
I am extremely talented.
Take a hot dog, stuff it with some jack cheese, fold it in a pizza. You got cheesy blasters. And then all the kids say, thanks, Meat Cat. And then Meat Cat flies away on his, skateboard.
Well, so we're here with the latest TV and movie news. And the first one on the new there's a new ABC show, Once Upon a Time. And it opened with mixed reviews. A lot of people, I heard that they love it. And a lot of people say that it's not that good, that it's kind of cheesy. Because, well, this show... Okay, so the show is called Once Upon a Time. And it's supposed to be about this girl who is the daughter of Snow White. And she lives, like, in present time. And so there's this little town called something like Storybrooke or something like that. And so it kind of mixes stuff that happens, like... at this time and stuff that happens like long time ago at the fairy tales time. So it got pretty mixed reviews. I actually want to see it because, you know, I love everything about classic fairy tales and all. And well, as soon as I get the chance, I'll watch it. So I actually don't give it more than one season for the look of the reviews, but let's wait and see. Maybe we'll be surprised. But anyway, ABC has hopes for upcoming seasons, and it has already started signing deals for new shows. And the network has been given a script commitment to the Mad Men writer and producer David Wallard, who's also behind the idea of Desperate Housewives and Eli Stone. And remember, Desperate Housewives was actually really good on their first seasons, and Eli Stone, I actually love that show, but you know, not everything can stand up against the tides of the TV ratings. So, this show is supposed to be called The Stewards, the new show. We still don't know if it's gonna be starting on mid-season, on summer, or till next season, but it is certainly a possibility. And the show is gonna be called The Stewards. It's about, it's a hour-long project, and it revolves around an influential family. and all the various staff that supports them. And so the network has also picked up an untitled project from the writers of Judging Amy, and who are also the writers of Joan of Arcadia. And the movie is the show is like pretty vague, and it described as a romantic comedy that revolves around a girl genius, and the show is supposed to explore the question of smart versus pretty. So those are pretty vague descriptions, but certainly the writing talents behind those shows are really good, so they may be promising. So, well, a long time ago, if a movie actor or director found themselves working on a television, that was a sign of ultimate doom. I mean, if you were working for films and suddenly were working for TV, that meant your career was over. But that's not the case anymore. Today, that happening is just a sign of versatility. That just means that you can do everything. And, well, the next screen jumper is Iron Man director Jon Favreau. Jon Favreau originally was an actor. If you're a Friends fan, you should remember him as Pete, the multi-billionaire guy who dates Monica for a while. And, well, that's Jon Favreau. His latest works, he's a director from Iron Man and Cowboys vs. Aliens. And, well, he's also a writer, and CBS picked up the director's comedy called Tweaked. And they ordered a pilot on the project, and the project is supposed to chronicle the life and dating of Santa Monica's singles peoples. So, you know, originally, that usually the first descriptions of shows are not really good, but Jon Favreau actually is a good director, and he helped, if I'm not mistaken, he helped write in Cowboys vs. Aliens. So, you know, that should be interesting. And, well, he's writing a comedy that will start next season. And also, ABC has given a pilot commitment to one of his show's ideas called XCOM. And it's supposed to be an hour sci-fi show. And he will direct and be the executive producer. So I actually am more excited about the second one because Favreau has more experience directing sci-fi things than writing comedy, I think. But anyway, we'll have to wait till next year to know.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Well, this weekend's highest grossing film, though I'm kind of ashamed to say it, the highest grossing film of the weekend was Paranormal Activity 3.
Say what?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it either, mainly because, come on, I don't like scary movies that much, because usually scary movies concentrate only on making you scream and not in having an actual plot. Of course, I'm not saying that's the case in all of horror movies, but Paranormal Activity just strikes me as the kind of movie that some guy sat and say, hey, let's make people scream. And the other one said, yeah, let's make people scream. And they made a movie about that. So, and they not only did one movie, they have done three. And I'm not sure if I like a world where a dumb horror low-budget movie sequel makes more money than a Three Musketeers adaptation, but what are you gonna do?
Ah, blurred!
Yeah, so anyway. And next week, we will have the premiere, a lot of expected movies. We'll have for the kids, we have the Puss in Boots, and we know what that's going to be about. I'm not sure if it's going to be really good, but certainly it's not going to be worse than The Last Shrek. That I am almost positive of. And it's also the premiere of the new futuristic thriller In Time with Justin Timberlake and The Rum Diaries with Johnny Depp. While In Times looks interesting, my money is actually set with The Rum Diary.
I want to go to there.
It looks weird. It looks funny. And did I say it looks weird? Yeah, well, anyway, I'll be seeing it in any Johnny Depp film that comes out. And no, though it's called The Rum Diary, it has nothing to do with pirates.
But why is the rum gone?
No, it has nothing to do with pirates. But anyway, Johnny Depp films are usually... Well, he has some really good films, and he has some films that are just plain weird. And, well, maybe not that good. But let's see. It's actually a comedy, and it's a book adaptation, and Johnny Depp himself helped adapt the movie. So I think it's going to be good. And talking about Johnny Depp and the Rum Diaries, so, you know, Disney is partners with ABC. They're all the same thing. So, as you know, the last movie Johnny Depp released was Pirates of the Caribbean. And actually, there are rumors that NBC is not allowed to speak with or even shoot Johnny Depp at the events that he does promote in the Rum Diaries, because something that there's supposed to be some clause in Johnny Depp's contract that he, like, ABC cannot make more promotion for his new film that they did for Pirates, especially since Pirates is just coming out on DVD. And, like, what Disney wants is keep Johnny Depp as Captain Jack Sparrow in the mind of the people. So when they think of Johnny Depp, they think of Captain Jack Sparrow. So, well, I don't know. What can you do?
Son, I'm Captain Jack Sparrow. Savvy?
And, well, and that's it with Johnny Depp news. And moving on, the leading Spanish language network, Univision, has recently picked up a new show. It's called Que Viva the Chosen. And it's a Latin America reality talent competition. And it's from the creator of American Idol, Simon Fuller. That's not the British guy. This is another Simon. It's a different Simon. So the show is actually made by Jamie King, Jennifer Lopez, and Mark Anthony.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Well, I guess it's going to be kind of like weird, kind of like Simon and Paula weird on American Idol, but with real issues behind their confrontations. Because, you know, Simon and Paula debates on the show were just to get more audiences, but these two have really something going on behind them. They're about to get divorced, so it's going to be pretty weird and awkward. Awkward's the word we're looking for. So, before we head to a break, I actually saved the best news for last. So according to a report in the Washington Post, they're the ones doing the publication of Steve Jobs' biography. So they kind of have the scoop on that. And so the Washington Post said that Steve Jobs wanted to take Apple TV to the next level. And actually, they wanted to create a fully integrated Apple TV set. And quoting, the simplest user interface you can imagine. So, well, though Steve Jobs passed away last October 5th, apparently he saw the existing Apple TV system as just the first step towards home entertainment market. And, well, there has been a lot of speculation about that and how Apple hasn't got into TV business and everything. And, well, the idea of an Apple-branded TV set, I think, is really, really exciting. So the traditional TV cable box remote control model seems really, really old-fashioned when you think about all the strides that Apple has made in home computing, mobile music player, personal mobile systems. Just imagine what they can do for television. I think it will be awesome. So we're going to take a small break. And remember that you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And I'm your host, Lady Madonna. You are listening to Camera Roll only on radio.dominican.edu. So stay tuned, because coming up we have a preview for a TV show that's really good. So don't go anywhere and stick with us.
I believe that fate has brought us here, and we should be together, babe, but we're not. I'll play it off, but I'm dreaming of you, and I'll keep my cool, but I'm feeling I try to say goodbye and I choke. When you are not there, goodbye.
seem all right and smile when you leave, but my smiles are just a front, just a front.
I take it back.
You can't take it back.
Why not?
Because it's already out there.
Oh, geez, what are we supposed to do? Call the cops? It's already out there.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Hey everyone, welcome back. You're on radio.dominican.edu. This is Camera Roll and I'm your host, Lady Madonna. So, today's TV review is...
Our whole universe was in a hot, dense state that nearly 14 billion years ago expansion started. Wait, the earth began to cool, the autotrophs began to drool, Neanderthals developed tools, we built a wall.
We built the pyramids, math,
science, history, unraveling the mystery that all started with a Big Bang.
Yeah, so today's show is the Big Bang Theory, and, well, this show first aired on...
Since the dawn of...
Yeah, sorry. So this show first aired on 2007, and it's currently on its fifth season on CBS, and it's a comedy, and I think it's a pretty unique sitcom. So the show features five main characters. First, the two roommates that are geniuses, and they work at the California Institute of Technology, also known as Caltech. And the first one is Leonard Hofstadter, and he's an experimental physicist. And his roommate is a theoretical physicist called Sheldon Cooper. So they're both doctors. You know, they have PhDs. And they're like 25 years old or 26 years old. So yeah, they're pretty smart. And, well, their neighbor across the hall, it's Penny. And she's a blonde waitress that's aspiring to be an actress. And Leonard and Sheldon's two friends that are equally geeky and socially awkward. And one of them is Howard Wolowitz, and he's an aerospace engineer who does not have a PhD, and you'll think it's not that important, but for the show it's kind of a joke between them, because he's the only one who doesn't have a PhD. He has a master's degree. And the other one is Rajesh Kuthrapali, and he's an astrophysicist, also working at Caltech, and he's originally from India, and that's also kind of a joke base for the show. And, well, the geekness and intellect of all the four guys is contrasted by the comic effect with Penny's social skills and common sense, because she's everything they're not. She knows how to talk to people and actually be around people without being all awkward and weird. So, through the 5 seasons, a lot of characters have become quite relevant, for some episodes. One of them is Leslie Winkle, and another one is Bernadette, and the third one, and she's the latest, acquisition to the show, is Amy Farfaller. But, so, in case you've not seen the show, I won't talk too much about them, because they've been on, especially Leslie's been on and off, and the other two are more recent characters, so I'm not gonna spoil it for you. But, well, yeah, I'm not gonna talk about that. So, moving on. What makes the show really interesting, very, very interesting, is the mixture of elements that converge with the plot. So, the guys are not just scientists, they're hardcore geeks. And as such, they love all the things that have to do with fantasy, sci-fi, comic books, adventure movies, all of that. And we have Penny, who's your typical girl next door, who has no idea what a phaser is or who is Gandalf. And, well, she loves Radiohead and the Black Eyed Peas, and she loves buying shoes online, and she has no idea what she's doing with her life. She just knows she wants to be an actress. So, they're like total opposites, and that makes that really funny. And, well, no doubt the best thing on the show, the main reason a lot of people watch this show, that I must say is really, really popular, not only in the US, but in a lot of Latin American countries, this is one of the most popular shows, right now. So, I think the main thing that makes this show interesting is Dr. Sheldon Cooper, who takes being a genius and a geek to a whole new level. His social skills are almost null, non-existent, and he tends to be rude or disregarding of others' feelings, but not because he has bad intentions, because he's really social ignorant. Of course, after 5 years of the show, he's gotten better at getting sarcasm, irony, and a kind of feel for other people's feelings, but he still has a long way to go. There's this episode early on season one that Leonard is really sarcastic, mainly because living with the biggest brain ever. He hasn't won a Nobel Prize, but I'm sure he'll get one, maybe next season or something like that. So Sheldon's really, really smart. So smart, so sometimes they joke about him not being human, so being kind of a new species or something. So anyway, Leonard is really sarcastic at times, but Sheldon doesn't get it. So Leonard says, "Do you want me to make a sign?" Obviously being sarcastic, and Sheldon's like, "Oh yeah, please, that'll help me." And you're just cracking about it, because he's really clueless about all of that stuff. So much of the show focuses on science, of course, because they're all scientists, particularly physics, and the four male characters are employed at Caltech, and they have science-related occupations. So we have a lot of scientific theories or news discussed on shows, and they make a lot of science-related jokes, and they talk of everything from string theory and discussing the theory of Big Bang, and there was this other theory that I don't remember, to talking about the Mars rover and when Pluto was downgraded from planet to star, that was on the show. They're really current with things going on in physics. They talk about the Large Hadron Collider. They talk about Stephen Hawking and his theories. They're really on about the physics things and science stuff going on right now. But don't worry and don't feel bad if you don't get the science jokes or science reference, because Penny doesn't get them either, so you'll usually get an explanation further on the episode. So, obviously, one of the recurring themes on the show, well, the first episode, the series starts with Leonard and Sheldon, they're living in this building, and Penny comes to live there. So Leonard instantly falls in love with Penny. So one of the main like plots in the show, one of the main issues on the show, are the relationship between Leonard and Penny. So Leonard becomes really attracted to Penny, like he just saw her and falls in love with her, and well, that's a really good humor source for the show, and the seasons frequently features Leonard's attraction to Penny, and in some cases Penny's attraction to Leonard, and they're on and off, and it's kind of like a Ross Rachel thing, but with a geek. Oh, wait, is it the same thing? Yeah, well, maybe. It's really funny. Just go ahead and watch it. So, well, actually, my personal favorite Leonard-Penny-related quote is of the very first episode, when, so Penny has just broken up with her ex-boyfriend, and Leonard offers to go and recover her TV set. So when they come back, there's a lot of stuff happening, and then Sheldon goes and says, "You're not over her, right?" And Leonard goes and says this awesome phrase. I really like it.
Oh, Shelley!
No, well, it's not this one. It's the other one.
Our babies will be smart and beautiful.
Not to mention imaginary.
Well, I love that phrase. And they make reference to it later on one of the later episodes on the later seasons. And, well, another subject used on the show, in a smaller degree, but it's there, is religion, because they're, like, they have of everything. Sheldon comes from a Christian fundamentalist home in Texas. Howard is Jewish. Raj is Hindu. And, well, Leonard and Penny, I don't know, I guess they're maybe Christians or Catholics or something. So, anyway, so, though Sheldon doesn't follow any religion, all of his religious background, because his mom was really bordering on fanatic. So, like, Jesus loves everyone, although you don't believe in him. And she's always calling him, like, there's this one time they go to the North Pole to study stuff. So Sheldon's mom calls him and says that they're all praying for their souls because they're doing science things. So anyway, all of that comes into contrast with the science on the show and all the sci-fi portrayed on the show. So it has like a fun dynamic to it. And well, actually, I remember that because on the last episode, if you see the show and haven't seen the last episode, I highly recommend you do, because the last episode is just awesome. It's really, really good. There's Sheldon's mom appears on the show, and she's kind of the center of attention of the show. And if you haven't seen the last show, go ahead and go to cbs.com, and you can watch it online, and it's really funny. So, okay. Let's keep going on with this. So, what was that? Okay, so, well, the guys, it's actually really funny because they take the science they do very seriously, but they take with equal seriousness the fact that Superman can fly, and they will discuss as strongly the fact that Wolverine's claws don't rust, or how to take a stain out of Superman's suit, and then they will go ahead and talk about the possible implications of the string theory. So it's pretty fun, because you get, like, well, if you're kind of a geek, you don't even need to be a nerd. If you just know about that stuff, it's really fun to see them fighting about who's better, if Green Lantern or Aquaman. By the way, Green Lantern is better. So anyway, the show has won different awards, and the most notable are the constant nominations for leading actor in a comedy series received by Jim Parsons, that plays Sheldon Cooper, and to Johnny Galecki, who plays Leonard. And, well, all in a nutshell, if there's any show worth watching right now, I think it's this one, because one, it won't take much of your time since it's only half an hour, and two, is one of the few shows that after 5 seasons is still excellent. A lot of shows after the 3rd season or 4th season just go downward, but this one is really, really good still. So we're gonna go for a small break, and when we come back, we have to you our very own Three Musketeers special segment, so stick with us.
Oh, Shelley, a man's here to take you away to the future. Be sure to pack clean underwear.
That's good, that's good, that's good.
Mommy, why are you crying? Well, because I'm going to miss you, Shelly Bean. Even though you creeped the bejesus out of me.
Okay, I guess we're improvising now.
Well, I'm sorry. It's not my fault. I'm just incredibly smart, and everyone around here is dumber than a bag of rocks. Oh, now don't you start crying. You get in that spaceship. Mommy's late for Indian bingo.
Mrs. Cooper, hey, it's Penny. Yeah, I think I broke your son. Hold on. Talk to your mother.
Mommy, I love you. Don't let Spock take me to the future.
And I give up forever to touch you, 'cause I know that you feel me somehow. You're the closest to heaven that I'll ever be, and I don't wanna go home right now. And all I could taste is this moment, and all I can breathe is your life. And sooner or later it's over, I just don't wanna miss you tonight. And moment of truth in your lies, when everything feels like the movies. Yeah, you bleed just to know you're alive.
To go to there.
This is madness. It's madness, I tell you. For the love of God, Monica, don't do it!
Go ahead. Make my day.
Wednesday morning, papers didn't come. Thursday night, your stockings needed mending. See how they run.
welcome back. You're on radio.dominican.edu. You're listening to Camera Roll, and I am your host, Lady Madonna. So, today our review is going to be of the new Three Musketeers movie, and this is going to be our little special section, because we're not just going to talk about the new movie. I'm going to talk about all related to the new movie. That includes old movies of the Three Musketeers, and of course, the novel itself.
All for one, and one for all! And I just happen to have a song about this!
All for one, Musketeers sing!
All for one and one for all!
If you dare to cross our path, prepare to fall, cause we'll fight you! All for one and one for all, and all for one and one for all, and all for one and all!
So, well, I actually went to see the new Three Musketeers movie, and I must say that I have mixed feelings about it. First, because the book is one of my all-time favorites, and it's a classic story that there's no Hollywood film that has done justice to it. So I'm going to talk about first a little bit of the book itself. So, okay, the book is a novel, of course, called The Three Musketeers, and it was written originally in French by Alexandre Dumas, and the plot is quite complex, and it's complex mainly because it has a main story, and that story changes a bit, and then there are a lot of mini plots around it. So, well, the main story goes a bit like this. So, we start with D'Artagnan. He's a poor young man. He lives in the Gascony, and he travels to Paris. He's really sick and he's about to die, and his father once was a musketeer, and he goes to Paris to join the musketeers. So he's a really like hot-headed young guy, and he's running on his way because he has an appointment with the chief of the musketeers, and he bumps and offends, like, great, you're just arriving to Paris and you managed to angry three really big musketeers. So they are not the most famous of the musketeers. Well, no, let me rephrase that. They're maybe not the best musketeers, but they have certainly a reputation to them. So he bumps into them. There are Athos, Porthos, and Aramis, and they challenge him in turn to a duel. So they go to the duel, and he finds out that they're friends, and they find out they have an appointment to kill the same guy. So anyway, they're discussing the way to solve that, because, you know, if the first one actually kills him, the second two don't have the chance of revenge their honors. So they're discussing this, and they are attacked by surprise by the cardinal's guards, and the four of them unite, they fight the guards, and they escape. So D'Artagnan and a lot of things happen. I'm not gonna go too deep into that. The main thing is the cardinal guards are just supposed to guard and protect the cardinal, and the musketeers serve the king and the queen. So there's the conflict of interest between the cardinal's guards and the musketeers. But the cardinal guards are not the bad guys. They just follow orders, and they actually also protect the kings at times. So a lot of movies just portray the cardinal guards as the really, really bad guys, but they are not. They're just another force, like the Marines and the Navy SEALs. They're just different. So maybe that's not the best example, but you know what I mean. So anyway, D'Artagnan falls in love with Constance, and she's one of the queen's maids, and they help the queen, the French queen, give a piece of jewelry to the Duke of Buckingham, and they have a thing going on over there. So the cardinal learns of this, and he coaxes the French king to make a ball. Like, he says, oh, you should totally make a party, and you should totally ask the queen to bring her jewel to the party, because, you know, they were so expensive, and you spend so much time trying to buy them, and they're so cute, and she should wear them. And so the king, of course, is not really bright, so he goes and does that. And, well, of course, the queen doesn't have it, so, like, the ball is in 2 days or something like that, and Buckingham's already in England. So she needs her jewelry back to so that there's not any scandal and revolution going on. And so, of course, the absence will reveal her infidelity to the king. So the queen asks D'Artagnan to please bring her jewelry back. She, in person, does that. And so the four companions go on a quest to retrieve the jewelry from England. Actually, the so famous phrase, all for one and one for all, is not a musketeer creed. It's just something that... So they're planning to go and retrieve the jewelry. And they know that it's really important because if they don't do it... So the fact that the queen was having an affair with Buckingham was not only a death sentence for the queen, was also a war declaration between France and England. And no one wants war. Ever. So they realize that it's really important that at least one of them should get to England and retrieve the queen's jewels. And so they say, if one falls, the rest keep going. And they say, all for one and one for all. And that carries just a bit through the book. It's never as big as all the movies point it to be, but you need like a phrase so to make things interesting. So, okay, back to the plot. D'Artagnan meets Milady de Winter, and he discovers that she's a really, really, really bad person. And she's actually the ex-wife of Athos and the widow of the Count of Winter. And the Count of Winter is an English guy. And so the Cardinal recruits Milady to kill Buckingham. And he also gives her a handwritten pardon for the killing of D'Artagnan, because the Cardinal doesn't like him, because he has learned that D'Artagnan is really nosy in his business. So the Cardinal sends Milady to kill Buckingham and D'Artagnan, and, well, they're on the quest, and Athos hears this, and he takes the pardon, but he's not able to warn Buckingham on time, because Milady escapes, and, but he's able to write to the Lord of Winter, and when Milady gets to London, Lord of Winter arrests her, because she killed his brother. It's really complex, you know? So, Lord of Winter arrests Milady because she killed the Count of Winter, that's the brother of the Lord. So, she eventually seduces her guard, and then the guard assassinates Buckingham, and she escapes to a monastery in France when the queen found out that the Cardinal knew about the jewels and knew that Constance was involved with that, the queen put Constance on a convent to protect her. So when Milady escapes from London, she goes to that convent to stay low and keep under the radar. But she eventually finds out about Constance and she kills her. So by all of this, the four like D'Artagnan and the three musketeers find out about this and they go to the monastery. And when they arrive, Constance is already dead. But Athos identifies Milady as a multiple murderer. And she is tried and beheaded. And, well, on the road, like, coming back, D'Artagnan's arrested. And he's taken before the Cardinal. But D'Artagnan has... He tells the Cardinal everything that happened and that he knows everything. And he reveals the pardon because Athos gave the pardon to D'Artagnan. So the Cardinal is really impressed. And he offers him a blank musketeer's officer commission for the three musketeers because they were suspended. So the three musketeers refuse the commission because they're on good terms with the, you know, with the rest of the musketeers, and they're going to keep being musketeers anyway. So D'Artagnan takes it for himself and he becomes a musketeer. And that's the end of the story. He becomes a musketeer, and then we have another book's. The second one is called 20 Years After, and then the Viscount of Bragelonne. So we're going to go to a small break, because I have just told you about the novel, but we still have all the movies to talk about. So stay with us, don't go anywhere. And remember that you are on radio.dominican.edu, and this is Camera Roll. We're going to go for a quick stop with the latest news. These are the top stories at the bottom of the hour. these are the top stories at the bottom of the hour. WikiLeaks announced today that it was temporarily stopping publication to aggressively fundraise in order to stay afloat. On a financial blockade by Bank of America, Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, and Western Union that has destroyed 95% of WikiLeaks' revenue, the organization founder Julian Assange said. On Los Angeles, the involuntary manslaughter trial of Michael Jackson's doctor entered what could be his last week today. On the morning after, the defense called two police officers as his first witnesses. Defense lawyers will use the next 3 or 4 days to change the prosecution's content that Dr. Conrad Monray's reckless use of the surgical anesthesia protocol to help Jackson sleep makes him criminally responsible for the pop icon's death. A high school student in North Carolina was shot in the neck today outside her school, a spokeswoman for the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office said. The incident occurred about 1:30 p.m. on the grounds of Cape Fear High School. School officials and sheriff's spokeswoman Debbie Tanner said, in addition to the high school, a nearby middle school, McWilliams, was also put on lockdown after the shooting. On weather news, the tropical thunder, the tropical storm Rina became a Category 1 hurricane on today afternoon. The forecasters warned that the storm will strengthen before making a landfall. Readings from a reconnaissance aircraft show the storm had 75 miles per hour maximum sustained winds, according to the National Hurricane Center in Miami. And these were the top stories at the bottom of the hour. Hello and welcome back. Those were the top stories. And we are going to keep on talking about the Three Musketeers. So you now know the actual plot of the book and the novel and how it goes, like, largely. And before we continue, let me give a shout out to the people who are listening to us and commenting on Twitter and Facebook, to Caro Aiza and Ale Linaje. Thank you for listening. And remember, if you want to say anything to us, go ahead on Twitter and Facebook to the camera roll pages. So, okay. Now, there is not one single movie that has kept wholly to the novel's plot. Actually, because the more interesting and movie-like part of the plot is the one having to do with the Queen's jewelry and her affair with Buckingham. But there are a lot of things that happen at the same time that makes the story so rich. If you actually read the book, you'll notice that more than an action and sword fight book, is a dramatic novel. It has a lot of... If you thought about it, it's kind of a soap opera thing, because there are a lot of hidden affairs and a lot of mystery and plots going on behind the main thing that would be the King of France. And actually, the King of France has I think one apparition, like one scene on the book, because he's not that important. The important stuff is all the things that go behind the back of the king and like under the water of the monarchy. So, and it's really, really interesting. I think the best Musketeer-related movie is actually The Man in the Iron Mask. It is not directly based on the novel, and it takes a lot of liberties. And it doesn't talk about the main plot of the book. It's supposed to be like an afterthought of the book. And it's not the best story, but what it has is the best portrayal of the Musketeers that we have to found on TV, on movies. Because when you read the book, you form a certain picture of the characters in your mind. And this movie is the one that most closely approaches to the idea that most people had of these characters. So, and there are over 20 film adaptations of this book. I mean, even Mickey Mouse has done a Three Musketeers movie. And my essay is that one is really, really funny. I think it's maybe the most entertaining Musketeers movie there is. But anyway, the next movie noteworthy, because it's the one that almost everyone has seen, were two movies. It's the two latest Musketeers movies. The one that came out before this one is called The Musketeer, and it's so bad that I'm not even gonna talk about it. It's really, really bad. If you like The Three Musketeers, please don't go watch that movie. It's bad. Okay, so moving on. The one that came before that, and is one I think most people have seen, is very Hollywood-like in all of it, the style, the script, everything. And the story is not really well done. And, I mean, Kiefer Sutherland is Athos, and Charlie Sheen is Aramis. So, it's bad. I mean, the performances are really bad. You can laugh at Charlie Sheen of all the bad acting he does in that movie. On the upside, Chris O'Donnell plays D'Artagnan, and he's really cute. So, anyway, I think the only good thing that came out of that movie was the theme song that's called All for Love, and is performed by Bryan Adams, Rod Stewart, and Sting. It's a great love song, it's a beautiful song, but the movie is not that good. Go ahead and download or buy this song, that one is really good. So, well, that being said, I will go into the new movie. So, first of all, Orlando Bloom, he should stick to playing Legolas. He is pitiful. But actually, compared to some of other of his roles, he's just okay. I mean, he's not that good, but we've seen worse. Troy is worse. Like, his acting in Troy, that's rock bottom for him, I think. So this one's actually not that bad, but I think mainly because Buckingham is just a pawn in this movie, and he doesn't have to talk much. And he actually comes out as, like, kind of, like, presumptuous. I don't know. I didn't like him, but it wasn't that bad. The main thing that I didn't like was the way they portrayed Buckingham. Anyway, the plot of the movie actually follows the quest to recover the Queen Jewels, and it actually sticks to a lot of the book's facts. It sticks to the fact that D'Artagnan is young, that most of the movies don't show it. D'Artagnan is supposed to be like 18 or 20 years old, and that plays out well, and it's really important because he's a country boy. He's not a grown man, so a lot of the mistakes he makes are due to that, and his inexperience on the city and of being a musketeer and everything. So that actually I liked. And, well, it has the essentials of the Cardinal, Milady, and Rochefort as the bad guys, but takes Buckingham as a bad guy also. And as you must know, Buckingham was not a bad guy. He was in love with the queen, but he doesn't play a bad guy. He actually, when he hears the queen needs the jewels back, he makes everything in his power to help the musketeers get back to France on time so the queen will not be discovered. But anyway, he gets killed in the book, so anyway. And in the movie, he's a bad guy, but he is also betrayed by the cardinal. And I actually can understand why they did that, because it makes some parts of the movie more interesting. I mean, it's not really interesting to see the guy, you know, Buckingham helping the musketeers when you thought he was bad. I don't know. It's not the worst thing in the movie, actually. The main attraction in the movie were the special effects, and they are actually not that good. And though it's shot in 3D, the 3D effect is not worth the price, because the 3D doesn't bring any different or special to the narrative of the film. Now, I recommend you watch the trailer before you actually spend any money on the movie, because the main freedom the filmmakers took regarding the book was, if you've seen the trailer, you'll know that they use flying ships. And that is actually kind of weird and has nothing to do either with history or the original novel or anything. There's nothing to do with it. But if you can get past the fact that they put flying ships on the movie, you may actually kind of enjoy it. But anyway, they try and give an explanation of why the boats are there, And if you think about it, it's not that far-fetched. I mean, it's far-fetched, but it's not that crazy. It's not like putting vampires in the Three Musketeers movie or like making robots coming out of space. I mean, this is actually, when you see the movie, you kind of get the explanation, although it's not that great. But anyway, it's not as the explanation they give is not as satisfying as you would wish. And of course, they do these actualizations in the film to get younger audiences that wouldn't normally go to see this movie. So anyway, I like that the main plot remains somewhat loyal to the novel, but I felt that, okay, so if you get past the ships, that actually the ships are not that important in the movie. They're not that often on it. And I mean, you could have done without the ships, but it brings something different to the movie. Anyway, I liked that the plot was actually quite loyal to the novel, but I felt that it could have been better if, for instance, they would have given more screen time to develop the relationship between the musketeers, especially the deep friendship that comes between Athos and D'Artagnan, instead of the main many lame scenes where the king is so important in this movie. They show the king too many times for it, and he's not an important part, but it's way too much that what you'd actually like it to be, because the king is not important. It shouldn't be important in this story, but they do this in the movie, and they put some lame scenes where the king tries to befriend D'Artagnan. And if any relationship was important for this movie, was the one between the musketeers. Instead, the movie finishes with the feeling that the only thing these guys have in common is a title and a sword. And well, they actually, a lot of things happen, like small things happen in the book that make you get the feeling that they're like brothers. And if they had taken that into the screen, so you could get the feel that they actually really appreciate each other and cannot live without each other, that would have been really, really impressive. Also in the movie, there's no actual romance between Buckingham and the Queen. Everything's a plot devised by the Cardinal to screw both the King of France and Buckingham, and by so doing that, screwing also England. And so all of that is because he wants to be the leader of the kingdom, because then the French king will go into war with England and he'll be destroyed, obviously, and the cardinal will be the one which all the people turns to for help. So that actually makes no sense, because Richelieu already had all the power he wanted without being the king. He could do anything he wanted without having to respond to the people. And he had more, because he controlled the king. The king did everything Richelieu wanted him to do, because the king wasn't that smart, you know? So the movie actually feels more like a Pirates of the Caribbean film than a Three Musketeers one. Even the music sounds like a copy of Hans Zimmer's score for Pirates. I did like the music at first, but at the middle of the film, I kept expecting Jack Sparrow just to appear out of nowhere, because the music was so like the Pirates of the Caribbean music. So, if you like Pirates of the Caribbean, you're not that big a fan of the Three Musketeers, or don't mind the flying ships. I think the flying ships are just in three or four scenes, like sequences. You don't mind that much this movie. So, well, anyway, the best thing in the movie, I think, is the way they portrayed Milady. But even so, the movie doesn't go deep enough into her. In the movie, she's just an assassin, where in the book, she's a highly intelligent and vengeful woman. Besides, in the movie, the only thing going between her and Athos is that she was with him and betrayed the musketeers on a mission. And she gave some plans that they had to Buckingham. That's okay, so she betrayed them, but it doesn't go as far as in the book. In the book, Athos and Milady were married, and her treason was huge. She's a true harpy on the novel. In this film, Mila Jovovich's portrayal of Milady kind of eclipses the performances of the musketeers at times. And I mean, the movie's called The Three Musketeers, not this killer assassin who also kills zombies on her free time. So when your main characters are not able to stay atop the secondary characters, something's wrong. Anyway, talking about actors, the guy who plays the Cardinal actually looks too much like John Malkovich for comfort, especially when John Malkovich played Athos in The Man with the Iron Mask. And though the kid who plays D'Artagnan makes a good job in showing his enthusiasm, I don't think he quite convinces the audience of being a poor French teenager on the 1800s preparing to become a warrior. You get the feel that he's a brat, like, coming out of the city, I don't know, like a main kid right now if you take him out of the high school. He's, I don't know, you don't get the feel that he's on that time. The main issue with this movie is that even though it's not that bad an adaptation of the book, On the Sidelines intends to focus on the grown things, when that time could have been used to go deeper into the motivations and feels and interactions of the characters. But then again, it is supposed to be a light-action, entertaining film and not a drama. The thing that makes me happy about this movie is that movie adaptations keep coming out of good books. And it is really good to know that some people, at least, are more interested in this kind of stories, classical, good stories, than the Twilight cheap literature. So anyway, we're gonna take a small break. That's it for the Three Musketeers thing. Remember that you're on radio.dominican.edu. This is Camera Roll, and I am your host, Lady Madonna. Stay tuned, because coming up, we have the hottest gossip for you. So, stay tuned.
Shadows on my wall. All night, hearing voices telling me that I should get some sleep, because tomorrow might be good for something. Hold on, feeling like I'm headed for a breakdown, and I don't know. But stay a while and maybe then you'll see a different side of me. I'm not crazy, I'm just a little impaired. I know right now you don't care, but soon enough you're gonna think of me and how I used to be me. And talking to myself in public and dodging glances on the train. I know they've all been talking about me. I can hear them whisper, and it makes me think there must be something wrong with me. Out of all the hours thinking, somehow I've lost my mind. But I'm not crazy, I'm just a little.
No, you don't have people killed. I have people killed. I'm the bad guy, remember?
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
Legendary!
Oh, well, let me ask you something. Does she have an alibi?
For what? Why would she need an alibi?
So you're saying she does not have an alibi?
Well, no.
Okay, so we've established she ain't got no alibi. She ugly. She ugly. U-G-L-Y. She ain't got no alibi. She ugly.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Camera Roll on radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Lady Madonna, and have we got the hottest gossip for you. So before we start, I'm going to give another shout out to my aunt Gabby that's listening to us. Thank you for listening. And now to the gossip. So Lindsay Lohan's life is a very sad one indeed. Who thought that the charming little girl from The Parent Trap would be convicted for jail so many times? While her probation got revoked, she's out on bail till November 2, that's the day of her trial. And she's gonna be going to jail maybe, we don't know how long she'll be there. But for the meanwhile, she's doing some community service, because mandated, at the morgue. And apparently she didn't show up on time the first day, but supposedly she's working really, really hard. And she even brought burgers and cupcakes to say she was sorry.
Did anybody know a good place for cupcakes?
I think there's a
McEnroe,
place...
give me a break. I'm on it. 77th in Amsterdam, 68th in Columbus, 125th and President Clinton Boulevard. Also, don't overthink it. Sara Lee, Frozen. Unbelievable.
So, well, who doesn't like cupcakes, right? And on another food-related news piece, this is not quite gossip, but let's say it is. So Bon Jovi has just found a unique way to give back. So the rocker and his wife have opened up a restaurant in central New Jersey named Soul Kitchen. It serves gourmet quality dishes using a lot of ingredients from their own garden with one major twist. There are no prices. Customers are simply asked to leave whatever amount they wish and can on an envelope on the table, and all proceeds go to charity, and those who cannot afford or will prefer to donate their time instead are encouraged to do volunteer work at the restaurant. So what he said is that with the economy going down, one of the things that he noticed was the disposable income was one of the things that went first. And Bon Jovi also told the Associated Press, and I quote, "Dining out, the family going to a restaurant, mom not having to cook, dad not having to clean up, a lot of good memories are made around restaurant tables." So, wow, this is actually really impressive.
I'm gonna go talk to some food about this.
So, if you happen to be near New Jersey, you, of course, encourage you to go and try Soul Kitchen and not only have a good meal, but feel good about it because you're helping others. And, well, it seems like it's split and divorce season on the celebrity world. And the Ashton Demi situation is still not clear for us. Though a lot of different sources keep spotting them in separate events, that doesn't mean that they're breaking up. But Ashton released a video 2 days ago when he rambled on about the state of truth, as he said, on the media. Come on, dude. If you just cheated, say so. Don't try to put this on the media. Those are the same lying bastards who made your living possible, by the way. But yeah, because it's very easy to complain when the media is bad on your case. But when the media is helping you get a new TV show, we don't hear you complaining about it, right? So don't blame it on the media. It's your fault if things are not going good in your marriage, dude. So it kind of is divorce season. Another guy getting divorced is CIA creator. And, well, this is actually quite interesting because his wife is complaining about him canceling her American Express Black Card. FYI, that credit card has no expense limit, but the cardholders must spend a minimum of $250,000 a year.
Ah, nerds! Nerds! Ah, blurg! Oh, shark farts.
Oh. So, and another possible divorce is Kim Kardashian. Wow. She didn't even make it a month. It's just... come on, she just got married. But anyway, there have been numerous split bills reported in various publications. And now comes a report that Kim's agent has dropped Chris, that is her husband. I don't actually watch these things, but I know a lot of people like this, so that's why it's in the show. I don't like either the Kardashians or Jersey Shore or Real Housewives of New Jersey or none of that reality BS, okay? I don't like that. but I know people are really interested in Kim Kardashian's life. I don't know why. But anyway, one report of a close source to the couple said that Kim Kardashian's agent, her agent had taken her husband Chris as a client, and now her agent is dropping him. And that the Kardashians reality TV have no plans of featuring the couple together on a reality show. Not even a Road to Divorce one. Oh, and we had so many plans for them. There was the newlyweds, the baby coming, the divorce thing, and it just fell short. Not even a divorce one. Oh, that's just so sad. Not really. So, we were thinking that her only wedding regret was that she wished she had stood on a box to kiss her new husband, because, you know, he's freakishly tall and she's medium height. So anyway, apparently not all things are golden on the reality TV paradise. The wedding that was called a fairy tale wedding has no real happy ending. So for all the girls out there, like, following Kim Kardashian as a role model, just don't do it. It's really sad. Don't take her as a role model. There are better role models. And speaking of role models, apparently Madonna is not a really good role model right now, because there are rumors, well, more than rumors. So we've just found out that she has a brother, and her brother has been homeless for 1 year. 1 year out on the streets with no money. And of course we can say that she doesn't know about it, but if we know about it, she knows about it. So I know that adopting kids from Africa and giving money to the United Nations, if you have a lot of money, that's really, really important. But I think she could spare some of her time, like, taking out her material girl role and helping her brother, don't you think? Anyway, it's kind of sad to hear that. Of course, the brother has been on some interviews and that, and I guess he's being paid for that, so he may not be homeless anymore. Scandal always makes money for people, I hear. So, Glee's Lea Michele, she had recently split with her longtime boyfriend, Theo Stockman. I think they had been going out for about 4 years, but she was interviewed recently, and just like the happy and optimistic Rachel Berry, she's looking on the bright side of the breakup, and she has been heard to say, and I quote, "I'm having a great time." And apparently she's having really good time and lots of fun. And well, the singlet starlet told some reporters 3 days ago that at a party, there was this 15-year anniversary party, and she said that she feels like she lost a boyfriend, but she gained a best friend. So you go, girl, and teach them, all those girls that follow Bella Swan kind of depressed humor. If your boyfriend breaks up with you, you don't spend 6 months in a room spinning on a chair, like, depressed, like that girl. If your boyfriend leaves you, get over it. Go ahead. The sun is shining bright outside, and sing, jump, be happy. Be like Lea Michele, be happy. Of course, she has reason to be happy, because she's not only in Glee, she's getting a role on a movie or a play. Okay, so it's a play about a real thing that happened on a school here in the US. There was this high school where they were planning to do a Rent musical, and the production got canceled because of the mature content of that play. And so they are making a play or a movie, I'm not sure about that, about that incident. And Lea Michele is going to play the lead on that. And she's also the voice of a movie that came out recently called Dorothy of Oz. And I guess she has reasons why to be happy. Don't we all? We all have reasons to be happy. So I'm sorry, but that's all the time we have today. Hope you listen to us next week. Remember, 5 to 6 only on radio.dominican.edu. This is Camera Roll, and I'm your host, Lady Madonna, for your weekly feed of TV and movie news, and of course, gossip. So don't go away, stay tuned, because coming up is the show Splice with your very own DJ Tortula. So
I'll be back.
And well, hope you hear us next week. And if you miss one show, you can always go to the radio.dominican.edu website. We'll post the link later, and you can actually listen to the podcast of our earlier shows. So if you miss one or want to hear us again, you can go ahead and download or hear the podcast online. Tune in next Monday, 5 to 6, for a new episode of Candle.